Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 149.
This week on the podcast, Rand Paul prepares to unleash the American dream on an unwitting public. No news yet on whether that's a condition that can be treated.
And this week on Hillary Pillory, Hillary moves her campaign artillery to an auxiliary office on Tillery.
The world applauds the outline for an Iran deal. Well, the world minus GOP congressmen and their party president Bibi Netanyahu.
And Jerry Brown must really love walnuts and hate showering. A discussion of why.
Edward Snowden encourages us to take a principled stand on dick pics, in continuing to take them.
And even Pat Robertson knows the gays aren't trying to have pizza at their wedding receptions. Sees this more of a cake lobby issue.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
We're back on the Monday train.
Yeah, sure.
Can't be trusted. We don't know what's going on.
Well, you were out of town.
I was out of town. People were places.
I hope you all had great holidays.
Yes. That's right.
Easter, Passover, whatever you were celebrating.
We're finally at the part
of... A day of rebirth.
The year where we get free matzah for a week at work, which you would think would not be exciting because matzah is just bread and water mixed together.
Yeah, it's not great.
Doesn't matter. It's the most exciting part of the year by far.
You like a good sort of like bland, crunchy thing.
I love a good bland, crunchy thing. You add some butter to that and it's like a dream.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It's a dream come true.
Well, fair enough.
So
it's also the time of peeps, which is another exciting
thing. Well, Easter is actually...
Cadbury cream eggs.
I dislike Easter because it is the day they stop selling Cadbury cream eggs.
It is.
It's a holiday that's really about the death of the Cadbury cream egg.
Right.
The birth of the Cadbury cream egg is really it's sort of like a post Valentine's Day type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Cadbury cream egg dies and Jesus rises from death. It's a real dichotomy.
So true. Things. It's not how I wish things had gone.
No.
Mm-mm. I don't think it was the right death and birth scenario.
No.
But, you know.
Anyway.
Teach their own.
Yeah, that's right.
So we are about to live in a country in which two people are running for president.
Yes. We finally have an actual competition on our hands.
We can get... Ted Cruz can finally run against somebody.
Oh, I'm sure he's excited about that.
I would have no doubt.
Yeah.
Because Rand Paul...
It's going to be Rand Paul. On the day that you're listening to this, it's going to be happening.
You're also going to live in a world in which Rand Paul is going to be president.
You live in that world now. We don't.
No, we don't.
But
it's going to be exciting for you, I think, to know that we knew yesterday, today, that...
I'm confused
tomorrow
already.
Tomorrow was the day that Rand Paul might be running for president.
We found this out because he released a very, I don't even know, I was going to say slickly produced, which I guess is sort of right, but it's also sort of, it's
dramatically
weird. It's super
produced.
Dramatic. It's got like this crazy, it's like a Hollywood movie trailer, but I mean, not that good.
But with really like sinister music.
Sinister music, yeah. With, like, clips of his speeches and, like, also, like, you know, talking heads, you know, talking about, like, how he's a great candidate and he's the front runner. It's even
ranging
got a clip from Jon Stewart.
Yeah, I was going to say, ranging from Bill O'Reilly to, like, Jon Stewart.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird 2.5 minutes to spend in your life.
Right, but, like, the beginning of it is, like, on April 7th, you know, such and such is going to... what's his campaign slogan? It's got that in there.
Oh, yeah.
It's something.
Defeat the Washington machine. Unleash the American dream.
Yes, he's going to unleash the American dream. It's a unleash. When you unleash something, like, when I hear that word, I sort of think of, like, you know, unleashing, like, I don't know, smallpox or something like that.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think of the American dream as something that you unleash upon people.
No.
But
unsuspecting people having this dream unleashed on them. I think of unzipping Mitt Romney for some reason. Like,
God, that's right.
I can't, like, I heard unleashed and I was like, what was that Mitt Romney thing?
Yeah.
It was unzipping
Anne, right? Didn't
she
say
Anne
that?
Yeah, Anne was going to unzip the real Mitt Romney.
Yikes.
Nobody wanted that.
not a one.
Rand Paul is also preparing by having changed his Twitter handle from Senator Rand Paul to just Rand Paul proper.
Oh, sure.
And then he added doctor to the page's title to emphasize that he's more than a senator.
Ah, yes, he's also an eye doctor.
He's also not doctor, exactly.
That's right.
So this is the second in what is expected to be a busy month of four people announcing that they're running for president.
That's right.
We have, or I guess a busy month of three people. We already had one in March.
Right.
But Marco Rubio, as we said last week, is expecting to announce whatever Hillary Clinton is not announcing.
Right.
And Hillary Clinton's expecting to announce in the next couple weeks.
Right. Because we have proof of that.
Irrelevant.
We'll talk about
irrespective of when Marco Rubio is announcing.
She doesn't give a shit. Yeah.
So stay tuned for those.
Yeah.
Get excited. Meanwhile, Chris Christie has recently been considered sort of out of the top tier of candidates.
Yeah, well, he's a bad candidate.
Because he's
why.
A terrible candidate who's not going to be president.
Yeah.
However, that hasn't stopped him from angling towards being president.
Not in the least.
His new plan is to he's going to unleash himself on the people of New Hampshire.
Another thing that you don't want unleashed upon you.
No, exactly. Well, articles...
A close second to smallpox.
Articles, actually, he's going on this, like, New Hampshire tour. His PAC is calling it the Tell It Like It Is Town Hall Tour.
Ah, sure.
That's gross. Well,
that has to be his angle.
That's his
He has to own that angle, or else, like, he can't... compassionate conservatism can't be his angle, you know?
That's
like,
true.
He's not the libertarian. I'm the asshole in the race. Vote for me.
Exactly.
Like, that has to be his thing.
But people keep acting like New Hampshire is the perfect audience for his brand
of
political truth-telling and hard living.
You know where the perfect audience for that is?
New Jersey. It's the only audience
for
it.
Yeah, that's why he is the governor of there and why he will only be ever elected to elected office in the state of New Jersey.
It's like, New Hampshire is a place where, as you... I don't know if you ever heard this episode of This American Life, but there was an episode that was about the sort of cultural transition that their Tea Party wave ushered in, where they used to have this very sort of consensus-driven state, where the reason they were considered so moderate is because no one wanted to disagree and everyone was super polite. So everyone was just sort of vaguely moderate, and they would go about their moderate way, and like there were tons of towns governed by consensus, basically.
Yeah.
And that was just working for everyone. And then the Tea Party wave came in.
2010
And,
came
like,
along.
Suddenly they were passing laws that you could carry loaded weapons in, you know, the assembly hall and stuff like that. And they threw all those people out because they were like, wait a minute, guys. We are New Hampshire.
Yeah.
We just want to be polite and smile to our neighbors.
Right.
And then also not wear helmets while we're on our motorcycle.
Right. That is not what Chris Christie is
That's not what Chris Christie is about.
No.
Chris Christie is telling it like it is in his own mind, in his patronizing way.
That's right.
And that's not how people in New Hampshire talk to each other.
No. That can't
they
be sold there.
They respectfully talk to each other. They agree to disagree.
That's right.
They, you know, set off firecrackers. They do whatever you do in a state that has no taxes. But they're not... Chris Christie's not a libertarian who can speak gently to them, which is what would work in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
He's from New Jersey, a place that people in New Hampshire are not trying to go.
No.
So it's curious that everyone is acting like this is his only chance.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine a worse state, a worse early primary state than this. But maybe, I mean, I guess Iowa's not better.
No.
South Carolina's...
It's also
I mean,
not
I
better.
Would argue South Carolina is a better bet than New Hampshire, in my own personal opinion of how things are.
Maybe, but he's not evangelical enough, and that's
right.
what's going to drive
no, but
South
I mean,
Carolina.
That,
but just in terms of
just
his
in terms
attitude.
Of his attitude,
sure.
I feel like they have crazies running for office in South Carolina and getting elected.
Yeah.
People
you
love
could go down there and act real sort of like bold and brazen, and that would probably
play... Yeah, and misogynistic.
Of the three states, you're probably right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, of course I'm right.
But it's too
late.
That's
never been a question.
It's too late if you've already been a giant failure in the first two.
Because he's out of the... He's out of the running because of Bridgegate. He should have packed it up then, been like, you know what, it was a nice run while I had it.
Totally.
Then moved on, figured out what kind of consulting firm he was going to open when he left office, and just moved on with his life.
Yeah.
He could still be a pundit.
Mm-hmm.
He's a colorful guy.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't have to go the sort of the stupendous failure route the way Giuliani did. Like, Giuliani has been like a really like outrageous failure. Like, he's really failed big and never succeeded at anything. He never got to the point where he could just be a pundit because he's so outrageously like... failure ridden.
That's right.
If Chris Christie could stop short of that, I think,
yeah.
and just go and be a pundit somewhere.
That's right.
He doesn't need this to get a book deal.
No.
He doesn't. I'm disappointed that he's thinking this is a plan of his.
Yeah.
And also, 42% of Republicans nationally have said they would not even consider voting for him. So
yikes.
That's not the sign that you're going to be the presidential nominee for the Republican Party.
It sure isn't.
The person who is the top tier candidate.
Right.
Not
the smarter of the two Bushes,
right?
As
not,
we have discounted many times on this
it's so
on this
true.
Show,
right? The smarter of the two Bushes who didn't go to Yale,
exactly.
Like, don't that's not a thing.
You're not fooling us, Jeb.
Not fooling us, Jeb Bush.
He wasn't also fooling anyone on earth that he's a Hispanic person either.
No,
but he tried to on a voter registration card.
And then
that
they
he
were
out.
Like, "Oh, it was a mistake." But here's the thing: it's very difficult to mistake your ethnicity on the. I filled out many voter registration forms in my time because I love to vote.
That's right.
So I'm trying to vote.
Yeah, anywhere you go, you fill a new one out.
I fill a new one out.
Exciting.
I'm not trying to mess that up.
Yeah.
I did once mess up filling out a voter registration form, and it was a huge debacle.
But it wasn't because you marked the wrong race.
No, it was I marked the wrong party.
Oh, no.
Well, I thought I would register as a Green.
No,
and then I thought to myself, the same day, no, okay, I don't want to do that. Obviously, I would rather be a Democrat because I forgot that you couldn't vote in the primaries.
Yeah.
This was when I was 18.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't know. It was a high school voter drive. So I filled out two the same day and sent them both in.
Nuts.
The first one saying that was my first registration, and the second one saying it was a revision. And I was like, they'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. They did not figure it out.
Oh, no.
And then I changed parties again, and in New York State, there is a waiting period before you can vote in the primaries. So I had to wait a full year before I could vote in the Democratic primary after that.
Oh, my God.
I was livid. My mom had the Manhattan Borough president come to her first grade class at the time as part of a, like, visit the schools thing, and grilled him in front of her students about why this had happened. And it was an epic moment for everyone.
I love that.
In any case, Jeb Bush finally had to tweet out an apology.
Yeah.
Because he's not a Hispanic person.
Yeah, he said, my mistake, exclamation point. Don't think I fooled anyone.
Because his son tweeted that he wasn't fooling anyone.
Right, exactly. And then he said, LOL, come on, Dad. Think you checked the wrong box.
Hashtag.
Because that was that's what his son said.
Yeah.
And then honorary it said, honorary, Latino. Hashtag. Hashtag.
Yeah, hashtag honorary Latino.
So, anyway. He's the smarter of the two Bushes. Doesn't know what race he is.
No.
Or ethnicity.
It's complicated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Like, nobody wants to be that white.
Yeah.
That's what you know.
Yeah. My mom sent me this story, and there's not really any news here, but Ted Cruz has been spending a lot of time in Iowa since he announced for president, and his wife is trolling for votes in the women's toilet, basically.
That's the story.
The campaign The campaign just launched, and it's already in the shitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the article itself was funny because it was, like, really descriptive, and it was like, as toilets flushed in the paper towel machine word, because what happened was there was, like, a Ted Cruz event in some, you know, podunk, whatever, Iowa, and, like, his wife had been introduced, Heidi Cruz, like, at the event, and she was in the bathroom, and somebody came up to her, and then all the other ladies who were in the bathroom, like, realized it was her, and came up to her, and then they were all posing for photographs in the bathroom, and she was answering, like, policy questions in the bathroom. There was just like a whole she held a town hall meeting in a ladies' toilet basically in Iowa, which I think is going to quickly become a metaphor for the entire
Ted Cruz campaign.
yep trolling for votes in the ladies' bathroom. Ted Cruz 2016.
Ew. In any case, other campaign news. Hillary Clinton has not officially announced, but we know she's about to. And we definitely know she's about to, because when you when you're about to announce, you have 15 days prior to your announcement to, like, start being able to, like, spend money as your official campaign team. And she just signed a lease on office space in Brooklyn that is expected to be the headquarters for her campaign, which says that she has 15 days from now, she will be in the race.
Right, and this was last week. And so there was, like,
15 days from last week.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So it's got to be coming pretty soon. Although there is some sort of, I guess there's ways that you can get around that, because they don't know exactly who signed the lease and whether it was, like, an official sort of, like, campaign lease thing for offices or whatever. But, like, she definitely, like,
well, and she's
Hillary Clinton has an office. So, like, they have been saying it was going to be in April. So it does sort of, like, make sense. But it seems like it's imminent.
Right. The interesting thing about it is that it's in Brooklyn Heights.
Yes.
Because they're so cool and Brooklyn-y.
The website for the building that she signed a lease for says it's described as modern offices, Brooklyn cool.
Yes. Loretta Lynch also has an office in the building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a real hip spot.
Apparently.
Filled with politicos.
Yeah, exactly.
And then in other news, the building is on the corner of Clinton and Pierpont streets, but the next street up is called Tillery Street.
So it's
on the corner of Tillery and Clinton.
Subtle.
So, yeah, she's a real. Yeah. She can be bought off by the simple puns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In any case, the other big news of the week, the actual big news of the week, is that we have the sort of framework of an Iran deal.
Right.
In place.
They had to keep extending it, and then everybody was getting really pissed off because, you know, it's like,
right, they kept having tiny little extensions where it was finally like, why don't you
it's
just like
we're gonna stay the next day, we're gonna stay one more day. John Kerry was mad because he wanted to come back to that a Ted Kennedy thing that they had week, but he ended up having to stay wherever these talks were.
It's
or whatever.
Tough being so Secretary of State.
Really is. You can't just go to any old party you want to.
No, it's so true.
Yeah.
Sometimes the Kennedys have to have you be honored without you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in any case, so as of Thursday, we have the framework of a deal. They have until June 30th to hash out all the details.
Right, slash muck it up.
slash until infinity to the because they're at June 30th. If they don't have the details, they can just be like, "Well, how about September 30th?" It's not bad.
Exactly.
So, in any case, a sort of rundown of the deal is as follows.
Yes.
So we were negotiating with A bunch of members of the Security Council, Britain, China, France, Russia, and Germany.
Right. And we all came, everybody came to an agreement. Here. Right. This is not just, we were not doing bilateral talks with Iran.
No. Yeah. This was a deal with us, with all of these people and Iran.
Yeah.
So we wanted to extend the amount of time it would take to build them a nuclear weapon. Their current timetable is about 2 to 3 months based on the technology that they currently have.
And that's called the breakout time.
Right. We wanted a year breakout time. So we wanted it to be a year out from, you know, we wanted them to be a year out from having these capabilities. Right. To extend the time. This is a crazy deal, by the way. I mean, like, in terms of, like, what these points actually come down to, it really sort of blows my mind how, like, simple this all is.
Yeah.
Like, we're basically taking away centrifuges from Tehran.
Right.
That can be used to enrich uranium. And then cutting their stockpiles of enriched uranium. But we're basically just like, we'll let you do this, but only with old technology. Because the centrifuges we're taking away are the new ones. We're letting them keep old ones.
Yeah.
Because what they want, first of all, they want their sanctions removed. Right. Because that's, you know, because they would like to have an economy.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. They've been very crippling. Yeah.
And then they want the ability to develop nuclear capabilities for what they claim are going to be energy and medical purposes. So they're not willing to get rid of their nuclear program totally.
Right.
So our agreement is we're going to cut their supply of centrifuges by about 2/3. So there were 19,000. There's only going to be 6,000. And the ones that they can retain are the older ones.
Right.
Which supposedly can't enrich uranium at the levels that you would need for a nuclear weapon. They've agreed to reduce their stockpiles of enriched uranium by 97%.
Yeah, they're basically eliminating.
So they're basically eliminating their stockpiles of enriched uranium. And then they're also giving us access to their nuclear research facilities so that we can sort of monitor what's going on.
And that, at least to me, is sort of like the big kicker, just because like so much of that, and we'll get to this later, but like so much of the backlash has been sort of like, well, they'll lie.
Right.
You know, but it's sort of like,
you can't negotiate with the assumption that everyone is just not going to follow the deal. Like, there's no way to negotiate.
And I think Obama, when he gave his speech on this, when the deal was given, he said that and he was like, now we'll know if they're lying. And that's the thing. Like, right now, we don't know. I mean,
we know nothing.
That's what I think the main thing that we got out of this whole thing is being able to know.
Yeah.
Because I don't... If we find out that they are lying at a certain point, or they're, you know, trying to do this,
that negates the rest of this deal.
And it negates the rest of the deal.
And he's been very clear that if they back out of the deal, we're going to back out of the deal.
Right.
We are going to have the ability to put the sanctions back on that we're agreeing to take off. We're going to have sort of a trigger finger when it comes to the sanctions. So, and they know that. So, like, there's no reason to just assume that we're making a deal for no purpose that they're not going to follow. There's no reason to negotiate if you're not even willing to trust the, you know, that... And, like, why would they trust us to agree to, you know, like, why, that's the whole point of negotiation is you trust each other.
Exactly.
You just hope that each of you will make it work. Like, they have no reason to trust us either.
Yep.
We're, like, re-sanctioning them up a storm all the time. So, like.
I know. Yep. Well, and I heard that on whoever they were interviewing on Meet the Press, because we still have a lot of, we are still sanctioning them for other things, for human rights issues.
Wait, no, and we're going to keep some of those.
And I can't even remember who it was, but it was someone in the Senate. I mean. Because they have to sort of, like, deal with those sanctions.
Right.
And we're basically just saying, like, well, we might just jack up those sanctions.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, there are still
ways in which we can break their trust, too.
We still may try to fuck this up.
Yeah. Well, Congress is trying already.
They're trying.
We're going to get to that in a second. Yeah. They're on the way. The things that we still have to figure out until the 30th of June include... how we're going to scrap all these centrifuges and enrich uranium.
Sure.
Because what do you do with all those?
Right.
And then also how we're going to know whether they're giving us access to everything, which is always the eternal question of any of these things.
Right.
So those are the things that they still have to work out the details on.
Yeah.
But overall, we're sort of thinking that as soon as, you know, these details have been sorted out, we'll lift our sanctions, and also the European Union will lift a lot of their sanctions that are related to the nuclear armament situation.
Right. The other ones still stand.
But we're going to keep our terrorism, human rights, and non, you know, weapon related sanctions.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're going to have it set up so that if they violate the deal, we can immediately reimpose their other sanctions again.
Yeah.
So that's our kind of like trigger finger response that we can have. Obviously, Bibi Netanyahu, not a fan of the deal.
No.
Speaking up a storm about how annoyed he is about it.
Yeah.
Other people include his flock, the Republicans members of Congress,
uh-huh.
Who are concerned that the breakout time is not sufficient. They want to push back the nuclear capabilities for longer than a year.
Yeah.
They are concerned about whether or not Iran, as we said, will provide full access to
yep.
the inspectors. And they're also trying to figure, they're trying to line up some bill that will require congressional approval for the deal, because they're going to try to get it so that legislators have to approve lifting the sanctions on Iran.
But they can't just do
but
that.
They can't do that. And right. the White House was like, this will make us the problem.
Yeah.
Like, let Iran be the problem.
Yeah,
if there's
right?
going to be a problem, let it be Iran.
Right.
Because then the international community is like, fuck you, Iran, and then we can all deal with that together.
Yeah.
Don't make us the problem.
Yeah.
We are not going to be the problem. Yeah. We are negotiating in good faith.
Yeah.
So he was sort of like, I'm going to veto any bill that
yeah.
says that.
Well, obviously.
Which, I mean, obviously, yeah. but like, that yeah. is why. Because he doesn't want to be the problem. Because
yeah.
what's the whole point of having done all of this if we're just going to be the problem anyway?
Yeah.
We're so annoying. in any case, but people in Iran seem pretty thrilled. Iranian leaders are pretty thrilled about this. They were having rallies in the streets and
yeah,
such.
Well,
so they seem pretty happy with the deal.
Yeah, well, they're going to, it's like you said, they're going to have like some semblance of an economy back. And,
right.
I just don't, I understand why, I get the fear coming from,
sure.
you know, from Israel and some other places in the region. Because, like, obviously, like, you don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon. And, like, everybody gets that. But, like, the way to sort of, like, make sure that they are not sort of, like, a problem in the region is to like have them be a part of the world
right,
community,
be involved with them,
and that is sort of this is how you do that. I
yeah.
mean, and I just like that's the case with anyone. Like,
well, that's,
you're much
you know,
better.
There's a reason...
You're much better having everyone sort of just like end up, you know, being politely in the world community. Like
yeah.
that's
there's
the way to go.
There's a reason that we cooperate to the extent that we can with countries like Russia. Russia has a nuclear weapon.
Right.
Are they a pain in the ass? Absolutely. Do
yeah.
we see eye to eye with them on anything? Not really.
Right.
China, we don't love dealing with China. They're a pain in the ass too. They all have nuclear weapons. We cooperate with them because we recognize that we're all just sort of like part of the world community.
Right.
All of the countries that have nuclear weapons are part of the world community to some degree because they've sort of been able to power their way in.
Right.
But that's ultimately all it takes to keep them from using the nuclear weapons.
Correct.
Like, Iran is not going to try to self-destruct itself.
No.
It's going to, you know, they may try to do things that we don't think are good ideas, because they're doing that all the time.
They are.
But, like, this, you know, using a nuclear weapon is tantamount to self-destructing yourself.
Yeah.
So, like, that's not a thing that is really a plan for anyone
right.
at all. And so, like, if we have any, like, if they are in any way planning to develop this capability, it doesn't make sense to deal with them any way but diplomatically.
Yeah.
We're not going
no, exactly.
I don't want to deal militarily with a country that has a nuclear weapon. I'm not a fool.
Right.
You know? Like, we're the ones who've used a nuclear weapon. It didn't
exactly.
go well for anyone.
Well, and that's the other thing that President Obama said in that speech, which I of course watched. But
of course.
You know,
Brent loves
the
speech.
But bombing them on some level
doesn't
even really set them back that far.
No.
And it really you know, a couple years maybe. And it also sort of like, you know, they're going to be more apt to want to try and create this bomb than they currently are now. And it's
yeah.
also just going to create, I mean, we've already fucked up that region enough. It's like, what do we
yeah.
need to go over there bombing them for, you know?
No.
But anyway,
well,
Israel might just do it anyway.
Sure.
So
they can't be trusted to not bomb. But I mean, it just doesn't ruin things more to start bombing the Middle East. It's never solved the problem in the past.
Right.
When has bombing the Middle East ever definitively solved a problem over there for us?
Well, it hasn't.
Never once.
Not once.
So, I mean, this is really the first time that I can remember in my lifetime that we've had any sort of constructive relationship with Iran.
Yeah.
And I feel like
well,
it's
no,
a
it's
good
true.
Time.
It's been since like the it's been since 1980.
Since, yeah, it's been since
yeah.
before we were born. I mean,
right.
so I think this is like to try that we the fact that we have all of these people in Congress who are trying to derail this sort of minor amount of
right.
success is like our past strategy wasn't working either.
Well, and I think on like, some level, this is like also to do with, I mean, I think that
they've had changes over there. They're trying to
right.
open up to the rest of
well,
the world.
Well, I think on some level, like, you know, the Republicans obviously just love a good war, which
well.
They're not going to get right now. But I think on some level also too, like, this is obviously whether you want to admit it or not. Like, this is a win for the administration.
Yeah.
And this is also, they've had foreign policy wins, but they've all sort of like been in an attempt to sort of like clean up a past fuck up on
yeah.
some level.
Right, this
is
our first proactive win.
This is sort of like what if it works, people will probably point to as sort of like what the Obama doctrine is on some level.
Yeah.
Whereas the other things were just sort of like and trying to sort of like as, you know, reasonably as possible sort like of like
end a war either end a or war
or like, you know, do something like that. This is sort of like something that he really wanted, that he got done.
This is what we elected him to do. This was the kind of foreign policy we elected him to enact. Right. We got rid of the Bush administration and the sort of future Bush administrations because people were over being at war all the time and wanted to sort of deal with the world diplomatically. And that is what his plan was. Yeah. That's why we elected him. I mean, and Obamacare, in my case.
Right, yeah. That's true.
But so in any case, I feel like this is... aside from crazy pundits, this has been getting very good press.
Yeah.
People are very impressed with this deal. So, screw you.
Well, a lot of people didn't think it was going to get done.
No, well, because hadn't gotten done yet.
Right, exactly.
Yep. It wasn't going to get done until it got done, and so far it was not getting done. Yeah.
Yeah.
In any case.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a jobs report for you to talk about.
Back to domestic news. The terrible jobs report.
Yeah. I'm sure that means so much.
I know.
Well, no one knows what's going on with the economy right now.
No, it's crazy. Actually, we only added 126,000 jobs last month, which will either get rounded up by that amount or down by that much.
We probably added 2 million jobs, and we just don't know about it.
Because they also subtracted 69,000 jobs from the previous 2 months' reports, January and February, which were so great, and now apparently weren't that great.
Well, we knew that there was a possibility of that.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the economic analysts for the New York Times said that if your favorite economic commentator thinks they know what the economy is doing right now, they're overconfident because nobody really saw this coming. This was sort of like a big kind of like,
because we've been experiencing these months of like massive job growth.
Yeah, they've been over 200,000. I think last month wasn't over 300,000. Yeah. We've been averaging over 200,000, I think, for like the last, you know, we've had, you know, however many months of growth, the unemployment rate is way down. And so this was sort of like a head scratcher.
Yeah. But this is what happens when you're dealing with the economy, an inherently fake concept.
Bingo.
We should bring Kevin back on at some point to re-explain what the economy is to us.
Exactly.
We've
forgotten.
Grill him yet again on how it's possibly
We haven't
fake.
Forgotten. We just...
No, we don't. We know what it's not.
Exactly.
We know what it isn't.
Right.
And what it isn't is a real thing.
That's right.
We know that it's non-existent.
You can only guess on your, and have hunches and hopes.
There's a couple of things that Brett and I... Unpopular things that Brent and I agree on. One is that the metric system is stupid.
Yeah.
And the other is that the economy is not real.
Did you see that link that I sent you about how, like, doctors are, like, coming out, like, and saying that we have to switch the metric system because it's going to save lives for
Come
children?
On.
Did you see about this?
No.
Oh, yeah. I sent this to you, but I think I texted it to you, and it was
I don't
whatever.
Read text links.
No, I know.
Let's be honest.
I know. But, yes, they were saying that because, like, you know, like, parents, you know, give their kids, like, the wrong dosage when it's a tablespoon or whatever. But I was like, what are they going to do? They were like, sometimes they use the wrong spoon. Literally, this was, like, a thing that was, like,
Come
was
on.
In the New York Times.
Use the right spoon.
First off, use the right spoon.
And also, they're not going to know there's measurements in the metric system.
I was going to say, there's not a spoon for a milliliter.
No.
Like, what are they going to do there?
No.
Then they're really fucked.
This, if anything, proves my point, which is the metric system is stupid because imperial units at least allow you to use household items.
I agree.
In a way that is convenient to you.
Yeah.
If you don't have a measuring cup, how are you going to find out how much a milliliter is?
Yeah.
You're never going to know.
Yeah.
There's no way to inherently know much about the milliliter.
Yeah, like the American Medical Association or something like came out because a lot of kids go to the ER because
they've been overdosed
like,
on childhood medications.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those people's parents should be more careful.
I would concur.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But
little
anyway,
digression there.
I don't believe the metric system solves that problem.
No.
Well, and there was that Gawker article about.
Oh yeah, that.
I had a kindred spirit a slash thought crime.
Yeah.
A lot of thought crime going on.
Too much.
This Ellen Pao case has created an amount of thought crime that's like not
just
even.
Unknowingly, missed the time frame.
My timing is the
that.
Worst. My last Huffington Post piece was literally 1 week before the entire rest of the world wrote the exact same essay and got it read.
Right, about like soft sexism.
About soft sexism, yeah.
Right.
I called it small sexism because I wasn't yet in a world where we were calling it soft sexism.
Right.
We hadn't agreed on a term yet because it was that early.
Right, yeah.
Now we know.
Damn.
In any case.
Yeah.
Back to the news.
Yes.
Here's some updates on those Arkansas... Indiana, Georgia, religious freedom laws.
Yes,
that we
exactly.
talked about last
week. So there was a huge. This story became more fascinating to me as sort of like the week went on.
Yes.
Because it was obviously like, you know, as a person who is in the LGBT community, I was sort of understandably, you know, I mean, we were not happy about this.
Right.
I mean, you know, granted, sure. I don't live in Indiana. I'm not ever going to. Certainly not Arkansas. I mean, if I had to pick one, I guess I'd go to Indiana. But the thing that became fascinating to me...
I'm glad you thought about it.
Yeah. The thing that became fascinating to me about this is that, you know, Republicans for so long have sort of had these two wings of their party, and it has been the evangelicals and the business community.
Right.
And it is very rare that those two ever have to sort of like play against each
right.
other.
They never go to war with each other.
They never go to war with each other.
They have separate issues. The evangelicals don't care about money.
It doesn't matter.
The corporations don't care about people.
And the Republicans have been sort of just, you know, very safely been able to go about appeasing both of these groups with little trouble.
Yeah.
With this bill, they didn't. And I think they were shocked by the business community's response to this. And it really sort of, I think, is going to... I think it's going to be an issue in 2016 because a lot of the business community is sort of, it was immediate in its response to this, and it was with the rest of the country being like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Even Walmart, which is not like a bastion of liberalness, but Walmart is the
third largest employer in the world,
right,
and bulk is their business.
And is headquartered in Arkansas.
Right.
And immediately came out, I think much to the surprise of everyone, and some of these same businesses too. I mean, Walmart is raising its base rate for some of its employees right now. So, I mean, like, I think the business community is moving further to the left than the base of the Republican Party is. And I sort of love when you get, you know, we talk about this a lot,
but when you get these sort of inter-party wars
and also sort of like interesting bedfellows with like the business community and the LGBTQ community, like we're really sort of like on the same page here. It was very interesting. I mean, you had like a lot of tech companies like quickly saying that they were going to pull business out of Indiana where they have some companies, you know, Angie's List we talked about, like, you know, was going to stop. I mean, it was quick and they had to immediately backtrack on this.
Hate legislation does not do anything to build customers for you.
Right.
I mean, that's ultimately, I think, like, these are not laws. This was a law that basically all it did was provide corporations with a right that people already have to discriminate against each other on a personal basis for religious reasons.
Well, and that's what, you know.
Corporations don't need that right because they are selling you a product.
Right.
Your lifestyle has nothing to do with anything.
Exactly.
Like, we're going to talk at the end of the podcast about a Pat Robertson story that's hilarious, but he goes on about, you know, it referenced, you know, a comment he made back in February about how in, I think, Washington State or Oregon or one of those states, like, there was a florist who didn't want to, like, do a gay wedding or something like that, and he was like, well, what if it was a wedding to a dog? Would they have to sell to them then? And I was like, yes, because they're selling flowers. Who cares what you're using the flowers for? Their job is to sell you flowers. If you were a person looking for flowers, it is their responsibility as a business to sell you flowers.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They don't sell flowers only to straight people.
That's right.
There's no one who does that. They exchange flowers for money. That's their business. So that's the same thing. Walmart exchanges goods for money.
Right.
They don't want a legislation where some local asshole who, you know, manages a Walmart can be like, well, we're not going to serve gay people here. Because Walmart wants your business.
Right, exactly.
Like, it makes no sense as a business for the business community to want the right to discriminate against people.
Yeah.
It doesn't help anyone.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. That was the main difference with these laws, because there's already a bill that was actually signed by Bill Clinton that was from 1993 that was a religious freedom bill, but it was for individuals, which I would contend is already the
secret legacy of Bill Clinton, by the way.
Right.
Is there so many random laws like this?
Right, and I don't...
Glass-Steagall,
there's
the Helms-Burton law, which basically made the Cuba embargo, like, impossible to break. Like, a lot of these secret laws were signed by the Clintons. Anyway, continue.
Well, and I think on some level, like, you know, that 1993 law doesn't really bother me so much because it's sort of like individuals shouldn't be discriminated against or be able to discriminate against others based on their religion. I would contend that is already in the Constitution.
Right.
And that the thing that also made it so clear that this was obviously a bill to discriminate, because so many people were talking about, like, how, you know, we heard a lot of people on the right last week being like, well, there's already a national law that does this, which, A, if there is, then you don't need to sign it as a state law, because we would defer to the national law. And B, what is it that makes yours different? And the thing that made yours different is that the 1993 bill that Clinton signed was only for individuals.
Yeah.
And this granted those same rights to corporations, to companies, and to entities like that. And so you saw a lot of... So basically, the governors of both Indiana and Arkansas sent these bills back to the legislature and basically had them mirror the 1993 bill.
Right. So it was just a pointless exercise in signing laws for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that the other thing that you had is you had a lot of people on the right, you know, the the evangelical right come out and were really pissed that this got sent back to mirror that 1993 law, which makes it only even more clear that this was a discriminatory bill.
Their intention was to discriminate. Why else would they care?
Right, because once Ted Cruz and Bobby Jindal and all those people are coming out and, you know, and Pat Robertson are saying, well, why did they capitulate on this? Like, this wasn't the point of this bill. Like, no, the point of the bill, you're proving right now that the point of the bill was discriminating.
Which then is inherently unconstitutional.
Right, exactly. So, well, and I always said that too. Like, I mean, we talked, I think, last week about it, that, I mean, on some level, like, who really cares whether this passes? Because they were only going to have a rotten go of it for a while, because it would never have... I mean, this
is the kind of law that you end up setting a precedent for the opposite of the law by passing it. It's like poking the bear.
Well,
don't
exactly.
poke the bear.
Well, and just even Indiana, I mean, like, you know, they had to send it back, and then all of a sudden, they have to put protection for LGBT people in the bill, which was sort of the opposite intention, which is why people on the right were mad, but it's sort of like, you have to think about the consequences
of your actions.
They don't get consequences, because had they thought about this for, like, one single solitary second, they would have realized that, like, they would have been fucked on the back end here, basically.
If they had seen the parallels to any state that has ever tried to ban gay marriage.
Exactly.
They would have immediately been like, you know what? Let's not talk about it. Let's let people quietly discriminate against each other and not mention it to anyone.
And also, there was already precedent for this outcry, not on this level because it never got signed. Because we did this in Arizona once last year. And even Jan Brewer, who's as crazy as they come, didn't sign the damn thing. So, I mean, their level of incompetence shouldn't be shocking, but it still remains
shocking every time. Every moment that it's on display, it's more shocking than the last.
It truly
is. For no reason. Yeah. I can be shocked until eternity, apparently, in the same things.
I guess.
I never learn. In any case, so, we've been hearing a lot in California about how we have less than a year left of water.
Yeah.
I have been trying not to stress about this because every year since I've moved here, everyone has been like, this is the worst drought ever.
Yeah.
And every year, I've had to be like, well, how come last year was the worst drought ever? How is it that every year gets to be the worst drought ever?
Because it's ongoing.
Right, that's true. No, but the first year I lived here, it only rained twice the entire time that I lived here. And the second year, it rained for the whole winter. And then everyone was like, it's the worst drought ever. And I was like, last year it only rained twice. Like, how could this be worse? I don't understand where we're getting our water, P.S., obviously. But what I do understand is that 80% of our water is being used for agricultural purposes.
Right.
And that only 20% is being used by people in places.
Right.
So, in any case, Jerry Brown is having to address this water shortage because everyone's panicking up a storm.
Right. And he didn't really address
it. And he's not doing it well.
In a way that made people very happy at all. Because he sort of is basically only directing... Well, and this is the first time that we've had mandatory restrictions.
Yes.
But the restrictions focus almost solely on the 20% not used by agriculture and that it's being used by, you know, individuals, basically.
Right.
So people were not happy about that, basically.
This is something that I've often felt annoyed about because I get on some level, like, it is sort of selfish to have your lawn constantly being, you know, like, we shouldn't have lawns here. We live in a desert.
I totally agree.
Like, we definitely shouldn't have lawns.
I couldn't
Fine.
Agree more.
Should we be able to take showers, though? Yes, we should. I don't need any grief from anyone about taking showers that are too long, because that's part of living in a place.
Well, and by saying that we should do that, I think shows a level of misunderstanding that is sort of, you know...
Exactly.
It sends me into a rage.
There's the level on which we need to think of ways to live without some of the things that are just sort of like our attempt to like mirror what East Coast luxury looks like.
Sure.
You know?
Yes.
Lush lawns and rolling hills in your property.
Don't need it.
You don't need that. Sorry. Yeah, like, there's desert, you know, there's drought tolerant plants that you can replace those with.
You don't need to be hosing off your driveway. I don't know what that's for anyway.
No, nobody does.
We shouldn't have ever invented that idea.
No.
Whoever thought that was a good idea was a fucking moron in the first place.
A thing that you can do with your driveway is you can sweep it.
Yep.
If you're looking for an option that's not hosing it, you can easily sweep your driveway.
Yeah.
There's plenty of things we should not be doing. But the idea that, like, somehow by, like, flushing our toilets, like, we're the problem when we're growing all these water-intensive plants in the middle of the state that should not be grown here because we don't have that kind of water supply.
Right, exactly.
It's sort of infuriating.
Yeah.
And it's more infuriating if the state is not willing to address both of those problems at once.
Right, exactly. Because, you know, I actually, Bill Maher went on a pretty epic rant on Real Time at Friday Night. He should have. Because, you know, we do produce a lot of America's crop. Like, you know, sure. Over 75% of almost everything that America eats crop-wise comes from here. And, you know, 90-some percent of, like, a lot of nut crops come from here. And we have been sort of, like, really upping production of those to be able to, like, send those out to America. And also, we're a big producer of them, like, throughout the world, too. Like, we, like, almonds and walnuts and things like that. And it takes something like 4.9 gallons of water to produce one walnut.
A single walnut.
One single solitary walnut. We also have like a lot of, you know, vineyards and grapes are very water intensive as well. And that is the sort of thing that we pride ourselves on, having this beautiful wine.
There are certain parts of the state where that is a more acceptable concept than other parts of the state. They have a lot more water in Northern California. I can understand why they have vineyards up there.
Sure.
We have moved a lot of vineyards into Southern California. A lot of grape production in Central and Southern California. Does not have the kind of water supply that you would need to effectively grow grapes without bringing water in.
Right.
Those are things that I feel like when you're addressing urban water use, which you should do, you also address why we need so many fucking walnut trees in this
state.
You know?
Well, and that's, I think, what everybody was so angry about, because he didn't really address the agriculture issue at all. And he also didn't, environmentalists were really pissed because he didn't address fracking at all.
And that...
Because fracking is a two-edged sword here, because it takes itself a lot of water.
Right.
And then it also screws up all your fucking groundwater. And the groundwater is already where we're at right now. And that's...
Fracking, by the way, should not be... At this point, where states have now banned fracking that would claim, you know, that we know that you don't gain... The economics of what you gain are not worth what you lose.
Right.
This is a state where we should have banned fracking.
Well, right. I mean, 2 days before...
New York State, if Cuomo can ban fracking, Jerry Brown can ban fracking.
Yeah, I know. This is Jerry Brown's last term. He doesn't sort of... It's interesting to me because a lot of people were obviously pointing to these, you know, these are moneyed groups, you know, the oil industry and
these
the
are
agriculture
lobbies
group.
That...
He doesn't have to sort of capitulate to them, so I don't really know why he did, I guess, maybe. And maybe at a certain point, you know, those restrictions will have to come. I think they will. I mean, but because
You can't penalize the urban population of California, which is millions and millions of people...
Who live comparatively,
you know, resource-free lives when you compare them to these sort of like large tracts of agricultural production and fracking land, and then not in any way address where 80% of the water is going.
Right. Well, I think the fracking thing is, like I said, besides being a double-edged sword, it's just so scary because we are sort of like already to a point in the drought where we are getting into the groundwater. Like, we are using the groundwater. Bill Maher's guest, actually, on Friday night was, like, some guy from, like, Berkeley or something who's, like, studying the drought, basically. And he explained it in a way that I thought was good, where he said, you know, our rainfall, snowpack, all of that stuff is your income.
Right.
And then all of the water...
The groundwater
is
like,
just,
your savings.
Yeah, and then the rest is, like, your... checking account, like your reservoirs, your reserves and things like that. And the groundwater is, yes, your savings. We don't have any income coming in. The checking account is basically empty. And so we are getting into the groundwater. Yeah. If that groundwater is just a bunch of fracking chemicals.
Right, then... that no one has ever effectively tested, but it's flammable inexplicably.
Right. That's not what you're looking
for. That's not what you're looking for. That's ultimately what has led other states to, after seeing the experiences of a bunch of states where they did find that the groundwater was contaminated and it did become a problem for their drinking water supply.
Yeah, they banned fracking.
That is what we should have done here.
Yeah,
But also, walnuts aren't that great, guys.
Well, that's the thing. It's sort of like, I mean...
There should be incentives to produce things that work for California.
Right, if we are, as a state, can decide these things and we are forced to decide whether we want to have water to drink or we want to have a bunch of almonds to suck on crunch on or whatever, it's like the choice is clear.
There aren't people that will die because we decrease almond production.
Correct.
There are people that might die because we don't have any water left.
Right.
Like, it just it doesn't... this has been bothering me for a while, only because first of all, it becomes very easy to become very sort of like deaf to drought discussion here, because it's always so dramatic. Every moment I've lived here, it's been a moment where we've been in a serious drought.
Right.
So I've never had a moment of reprieve where I've been like, well, there's enough water. That's
great. We've also had serious droughts.
And we've had serious droughts
before
too.
And
we have water. And I'm also, but I'm also at a certain point, like, this was not my problem to figure out. It's not just that we have less water as a state. It's partially that we're using more for things like increasing walnut production and fracking. And those are not things... Those are things that could be dealt with at a policy level without me not having to flush my toilet.
Correct.
And I feel like of all of the series of hierarchies of how we want to use our water, we want drinking water that's safe to drink. So we don't want to do anything that harms our drinking water.
Right.
That's where the fracking situation comes in. But we also, like, living water is, at a certain point, it's more important than your lawn water. Certainly we should stop people from using their lawn water.
Sure.
Like, that I totally get. But, right. Living water shouldn't be less important than walnut water.
No, I totally agree. And as, you know, it's not our job as citizens of the state to try and figure this out. Should we try and conserve
ourselves a little bit more?
Yes,
absolutely.
We should be doing that.
But
it's not our job to figure out how we're going to have enough water
for me to take
a shower.
I know so many people that are, like, truly panicked about this water situation. And it's like, I think... it's like become like a proxy anxiety for people where they like are anxious about other things and they blame it on the water thing because it's been like such like it's apolitical people are just constantly forwarding me links about how we're running out of water and I'm always like, well, if you've been reading the news, we've been running out of water for a while now, like this is not news to anyone, but it just sort of like it's such a like dramatic thing to put on the entire population without anyone seeming to do anything to solve it except try to make regular people use less water.
Yeah.
It's infuriating to me.
I agree.
I've been angry about this for a while. I've been waiting to rant about this. I'm just sick of people looking at me with side eye because I'm trying to water my geraniums.
Yeah.
I have potted geraniums in front of my house. They're tiny geraniums.
Right.
I like the color.
You're not going
to
save
us. I'm not causing the drought because I have geraniums.
No, you are not.
But I get side eye from my neighbor all the time.
I don't like that.
I don't like it one bit.
Nope. Oh, anyway. Boy. So we've talked a few times, moving on, by the way.
Yeah, this is a whole new topic.
Yeah, we've talked a few times on the podcast about this Rolling Stone, you know, University of Virginia rape story. And some events happened with this over the weekend. Because Columbia University, their graduate school of journalism, came out and, like, just issued, like, this totally devastating report over the weekend about Rolling Stone's, quote, journalistic failures in publishing their story, which is called A Rape on Campus, which we already talked about how this was a little shady once before, because that's been in the news for months. We've known that.
Yeah.
But Rolling Stone officially retracted it, the story on Sunday night after this Columbia University story came out. But interestingly, they didn't fire anyone who was involved in the story, and a lot of people were really miffed about that, because they felt like the fuck up was so colossal. They didn't fire the writer of the story. They didn't fire either of the top editors who worked on the story. And a lot of people in the journalism community sort of felt like the magnitude of, you know, the editorial collapse was great enough that that should have happened. So people were sort of not happy about that. One group that really wasn't happy about that was the fraternity, who was involved with the supposed gang rape that they did not do, nor was there any proof that they did in the first place before the story went to press. And they're suing.
Yeah.
I can't blame them. I mean...
I get that. I also feel like, you know, one of the things that everyone has sort of been talking about as being, or everyone was talking about as being one of the unenviable consequences of the story is to sort of, in that it sort of like delegitimizes like legitimate rape complaints that were already going around at UVA.
Totally.
UVA's administration has had legitimate complaints that they haven't dealt with appropriately. And this, I sort of don't like the idea of the fraternity being the victims here in this way. And I know it's not their fault that the story got published this way.
I agree with you generally, but I think just on a specific case basis, they were here.
It's just sort of like,
I totally get what you're saying.
It's sort of like it creates a narrative that is ultimately unhelpful to the process.
Right.
And I sort of like, I wish that they wouldn't sue. Knowing what we know about the larger culture of UVA and how things were going, I wish that they would issue harsh words about this situation and not sue.
Yeah.
I know why they're suing. Like, I get what's going on here.
Well, and
it
on
just
some
sort
level,
of like
I think
it creates a dynamic that ultimately sort of perpetuates the problem.
Right. I agree. I think they'll probably win though.
I mean, I think they will too.
Because I think that they were now that it's been retracted. I mean, they were suspended from, you know, the Greek community on campus. I mean, like, I think it's should be fairly.
Nothing is as devastating
as having your fraternity suspended. No, and
this was like all like the consequences of it. And why, like, I understand sort of, like, the damage that it does to you on sort of a libel level. Right. Like,
I think they were clearly defamed, which is what they're going to sue for. And I think that they definitely were.
Sure.
So, but I
yes, just don't think it has the consequence for them.
I agree.
That they're going to be able
to claim
it did. Yeah. And I think that it ultimately makes them an unhelpful part of the larger story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, on some level, it was obviously, you know, the proper reporting was not done here, which is obvious. But, you know, I think it also sort of, it has brought up a lot of questions that sort of like need to be discussed in how we do report these things. Because, you know, I mean, one of the reasons why everybody sort of like is, you know, really mad is because they didn't follow up with any of the people who were supposedly, you know, the perpetrators of this.
Right.
But that was because the person who brought the story said that she didn't, you know, want them
to
go, which is sort of like a, you know, if you are the writer of that story, like you would think, okay, well, I understand why she doesn't want me to go talk to these people. Now, I would say, as a journalist, you wouldn't
someone be able needs to confirm
you,
something.
You wouldn't then be able to run the story any longer. You just have a sort of sad tale on your hands, but you can't go to press with the thing.
Or you certainly can't use detail. You can't.
Right.
You can run a story that no one wants to read that's an anonymous story about whatever.
But I think that it has sort of like proven the difficulties in reporting on these issues.
Which, I mean, I think is sort of, it's sort of legitimized a sort of like type of doubt that already exists for when people try to report that they've been raped. There's already a huge number of obstacles you have to overcome.
Totally.
There's the shades of gray of what constitutes rape, because not every rape is like a violent, you know, someone randomly grabbing you off the street who's a stranger. There's coercive behavior. There's all these other things. And it just sort of like, it's too bad that it's going to be so hard to report on these stories from now on, just because everyone's going to be constantly trying to doubt the tale of the survivor.
Yeah.
But that's, I don't know. I wish that Rolling Stone had sort of been a little classier in their response. I wish that there was a way for this fraternity to both kind of overcome this unfair thing that happened to them and contribute positively to the discussion ultimately. Right. I don't get the sense that that's their plan in suing for being defamed.
I don't necessarily think so either. They did say in their statement that they, and granted, this is, who knows whether this is them just sort of like trying to, you know, play up the fact that, you know, they're sort of innocent in this whole thing. But they did say in their statement, they said, more importantly, we fear that this entire episode may prompt some victims to remain in the shadows, fearful to confront their attackers. If Rolling Stone wants to play a real role in addressing this problem, it's time to get serious. That was
right. That's part of their statement. Response. I mean, you have to say that in your statement.
You do have to say that. I mean,
It's a terrible situation.
For everyone, yeah.
For everyone.
I hate to play the apologist to the fraternity because like, that is definitely not my game here. But
I know. I mean, I think part of my issue always is that I feel like a sort of like, I always feel like slightly offended by litigious responses to anything
this. Oh, I know, totally. Like, really? Like, that's your response?
Yeah, like you're going to sue for defamation because you were like, because you were inconvenienced for a week about, you know, your frat was disbanded for a week.
Yeah.
Like, Americans don't have the right to be in a frat. That's not, like, one of our most prized rights.
No.
But, I mean, you understand that this has done harm to their reputation, all of those things. It's just sort of, like, a shitty situation because it just perpetuates a problem that you know, they, I feel like, now sort of inadvertently have a responsibility to help solve, even though they don't want to.
Right, exactly. Well, and it's a problem that I don't really know that nobody seems to have like a great solution for either.
No.
Because, you know, nobody know, other than the fact that Rolling Stone like sort of like failed on all levels, you can sort of acknowledge why it is they failed on all levels.
Well, and also, you can also where sort of, is you can, UVA's you can, administration has a responsibility in sort of like already having been famous for not addressing these problems in the past. That is why UVA was the setting of this story, P.S.
Yeah.
Is because there were other issues at UVA.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about that, actually.
And UVA's
because, like,
administration
Rolling Stone was trying to find, they were looking on UVA's campus because they were sort of classically known as like, you know, a place where like all of this was going down and not being dealt with.
Exactly. So there's like a larger issue here that I feel like,
yeah,
if fingers are going to be pointed,
yeah,
that should be helpful in solving the problem.
I agree.
In any case, in other news about things.
Yes.
Bob Menendez.
Mm-hmm. Got indicted last week.
Yep.
We've been talking about how it was going to be coming at any moment. And
here it is. 14 criminal counts that he pleaded not guilty to on Thursday.
Yep.
That includes 8 counts of bribery in his dealings with his friend Solomon Melgen, an ophthalmologist in Florida, who is also among the richest ophthalmologists I've ever heard of.
Yep.
They've been friends for a long time. And so Menendez's people are sort of claiming that these won't hold water because, you know, they're going to have to prove that there was something sort of like tit for tat about these things and not just like two friends from 20 years ago hanging out. But here's the timing of the incidents in question really do line up to seem very tit for tat.
Yeah.
Menendez recommended visas for 3 of Melgen's girlfriends. Meanwhile, Melgen paid for 7 trips to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
He used a bunch of Amex points to book a hotel room for 3 days in Paris so that Menendez can meet up with his girlfriend there.
Yep.
He gave, through various entities and family members, $750,000 to Menendez's reelection efforts.
Yep.
And then Menendez, in exchange, also intervened on his behalf in a Medicare reimbursement dispute and did some other favors for him. And like all of the dates of these actions sort of line up so that it seems like they're sort of doing each other favors.
Yep.
And that's what you're not allowed to do.
Correct.
You're allowed to do favors for your friend if you're just a friend who's doing favors.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to exchange favors for access.
Right.
Which is what Melgen is doing in this situation. Correct. Having visas issued for his girlfriends and having Medicare reimbursement disputes dealt with by Menendez. Yeah. So
It's interesting that, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of people are calling for his resignation.
He's not going to resign.
Not going to do it.
No.
First off, he's from New Jersey.
Right. So he doesn't have anything to lose by
business as usual.
Right.
No
problem there.
Until they find him guilty, I don't think he's going anywhere. And actually, I think that it was interesting because they had they were talking about this on Meet the Press the other day, and Chris Murphy was on talking about, I think, the Iran deal, actually. But they asked him what he thought about this, and he was like, well, you know, like, our court system is innocent until proven guilty, and we should give him blah, blah, blah. And I guess, like, all of those things are technically accurate. But, like, I mean, he could probably survive. I mean, he's from a blue state. Like, I don't know that anybody is going to be that scandalized from New Jersey about this whole thing. I mean, like,
he's sort of, like, he's not known to be the most above the board guy already. It's like Charlie Rangel had ethics charges brought up against him.
Totally.
He didn't lose his seat. People were like, whatever, we like Charlie Rangel. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, Menendez, I don't think he's as well liked as Charlie Rangel is in his district. But I also feel like he's sort of like an institution in New Jersey.
Yeah.
He's kind of like a mediocre senior senator.
Well, and there were immediate sort of conspiracy theories about this because he has been sort of like the most vocal anti-Obama, at least in terms of foreign policy. He didn't like this Iran deal, and he's very pro-Israel. So he is, I don't buy into that at all. But I mean, there were a lot of people who were like, "Oh, Obama is trying to take down his biggest critic in the party," and it's like, okay, everybody, like,
let's all.
President Obama does not give two shits about Bob Menendez is doing.
Not even one shit.
Not even a bit.
No.
Nope.
Meanwhile, John Oliver scored a real coup.
Yeah,
he got Edward Snowden on his show.
Holy shit! Yeah,
God's sakes. And asked him to sort of explain this NSA spying situation in layman's terms.
And he dropped a real bombshell on us.
Yeah. Well, because John Oliver was like, he showed a video showing that people were sort of concerned that the government was intercepting their nude photos. And Edward Snowden was like, the good news is there's no program named the Dick Pic Program. The bad news is they are collecting everybody's information, including your dick pics.
So they're there.
They're there. The NSA does have your dick pics.
Yeah.
So just know that.
There you go.
It must be just terrible to be part of this spying program. The things you would have to wade through in the course of spying on people's communication.
Just.
Must be, really boring most of the time.
So boring.
I mean, oftentimes my mom will, or she used to when the story broke, say hi to the NSA when she was talking to me on the phone about the weather.
Yeah.
Like, that's boring, you know.
Big time.
Like, that. It must be like 50% conversations about the weather.
Oh, yeah.
Or traffic.
Yeah.
And then, like, maybe, like, 17% dick pics.
Less than,
maybe you think.
Yeah.
I don't know what people are doing internationally.
Hopefully more. Who knows? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, if only people were sending more exciting...
How do I get a job at the NSA?
Right. But so in any case, he explained, you know, Prism, which is the program where they kind of like take data from Google and Facebook and whatnot. And although I thought his response to one of their final questions was interesting, because they, John Oliver asked him whether Americans should stop taking photos of their dicks and sending them online, like whether this was a sign that maybe we should all stop taking dick pics.
Yeah.
And he said, you shouldn't change your behavior because of a government agency somewhere that's doing the wrong thing. If you sacrifice your values because you're afraid, you don't care about those values very much.
I love that quote. And he actually had a very similar quote in Citizen 4, actually, too, where he said that that was ultimately why he came forward on this, because he felt like the fact that he felt like that all of this, you know, government sort of overreach here was in an attempt to sort of, you know, like, make people fearful about what they were searching on Google.
Exactly.
And he, you know, felt like that, you know, the internet existed for us to be able to have that information, and that once people were scared to sort of have information, or in this case, send a dick pic,
right.
like that is when you have lost those rights.
Right.
And that has been a thing that he has sort of like stuck to throughout this whole thing as to why he has been doing what he's doing. And so I admire him for that, because I would agree. I mean, you sort of... He's absolutely right. That's
right. What is the point of all of this technology if it doesn't help us know things?
If you are living in fear of this, then you have lost.
Yeah.
So
keep sending your dick pics. Send away.
To me.
Right.
Inquire for my phone number.
Tweet us.
Right.
Exactly. Brennan's happy to receive your dick pics.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could just Anthony Weiner it.
Yeah, why not?
Tweet it to us. Yeah.
That's sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we're not proud. We'll look at it. We'll retweet it.
That's right. We might not retweet it, depending on who's operating the Twitter account.
We'll look at it first. We'll inspect it. Very closely.
Exactly.
And then...
We'll come to an executive decision.
We'll do with it as we please.
That's right. In any case, speaking of the internet...
Oh, boy.
Michelle Bachmann is a person who maybe shouldn't have access to it.
Losing the internet.
Yeah. She posted this crazy rant where she compares Obama signing this Iran deal...
Yes.
...to... that German pilot who steered his plane into the mountain last week.
Oh, boy.
She's not a fan of the Iran deal. No. Surprise, surprise. But commentators were, like, not having it on her Facebook
page. But you know
page.
What? At least, you know, we were fearful that she was going to be out of the United States Congress and we would never hear from
that's
her
true.
Again.
No, at least
and
she's out there.
That's not happening. So, thank God.
She's got words out there in public. She's not afraid to use them.
Nope.
But so, in any case, there were some funny comments. But they weren't that funny. They were only medium funny.
Right, yeah.
But so, that she got into a bunch of hot water this week about that.
Yeah.
Kind of an insensitive comparison to
me.
Oh,
you think?
She's a little insensitive.
Yeah.
Now, in final insensitive news.
Yes.
Pat Robertson is a man who's on the air speaking insensitive thoughts.
Still, somehow,
after all these years. He waded into the discussion about Memories Pizza, which is the pizza place in Indiana that... was the first business to publicly declare that they would not cater same-sex weddings.
Right.
Prompting a million jokes about how no gay wedding would ever want pizza as its
correct.
Food.
Yeah. Oh, I saw, did you see Zach Braff and Donald Faison released a statement today that they would cater your gay wedding with pizza if you wanted them to? It's like, perfect.
Wonderful. Yeah. So you still have that option, Gabe.
Yes, you can still do that.
You probably shouldn't exercise that option.
Don't.
If you're getting married, you probably aren't planning to.
That's what you and I were talking earlier about. Like, obviously, you know, terrible, disgusting, you know, like, Indiana hill people might be getting pizza at their wedding reception.
Right.
That's not something that the gays are doing.
No.
Never has a gay person requested pizza to be served at their wedding reception. No. Like, that's just not a thing.
That's not a thing.
No.
So, Memories Pizza in the clear.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the law no longer protects them from discriminating against gay weddings.
But they did make, like, freaking $1 trillion on this.
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody... Because
hate mongers were all over eating pizza.
Money.
Yeah.
God, people are the worst.
In any case, even Pat Robertson knows that gays don't want pizza at their wedding.
Well,
because he hilariously said, most gays, if they're having a wedding, don't want pizzas. They want cake.
Mm, mm-hmm.
It's the cake makers that are having the problem.
Oh, well, Pat's figured it out. He's got it all
figured out. Such an oddly specific comment.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me tell you about the gays.
Yeah.
It's the cake makers that are really facing hard times. And then he also went on to say even more hilarious
things.
Yeah,
what he's really worried about is that
the gays... It's not just the gays.
Right, and they're going to make you conform to them.
Yeah.
That's what he's really worried about, is the straight people actually... becoming gay in all of this.
Well, you know
situation.
That hanging out with gay people just makes you gay.
Right, exactly.
Obviously.
Because what he said is...
Having gay parents makes you gay. So many things can make you gay in his mind. It's exactly. hard to even follow.
Yeah, but having a requesting a cake be made can also make you gay.
Yeah,
apparently
no.
too. But it can also make you be into a lot of things lot that of the things. Gays are into.
Yeah.
Because here's what he said, and we are not at all making this up.
No, these are exact words that Pat Robertson uses.
These are words
uses.
That he said. You're going to say that you like anal sex. You like oral sex. You like bestiality.
Same thing, of course.
He said, sooner or later, you're going to have to conform your religious beliefs to the group of some abhorrent thing. It won't stop at homosexuality.
No, of course not.
No, we're just going to bring you down into bestiality, which none of us are.
Well,
none of us are practicing.
Right.
Wait, it's just
people
really...
that are practicing bestiality are the only people practicing bestiality.
Right.
Those are different people.
Right.
Those people are not being widely accepted. They don't have the right to marry.
The B in LGBT does not stand for bestiality.
No.
In case
you
wonder.
He also said that Christian beliefs are going to, quote, come under assault until polyamory and polygamy are acceptable.
Oh, my.
Now, I am part of the minority that has often claimed, who are we to say that can't be acceptable? It's not my business. Do you want to practice polyamory? I'll let you marry. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know. So, in any case, maybe in my perfect world, his concerns come true.
Yeah.
But then he also, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, in February, had talked about this florist discriminating against a gay couple. And his response to that was, to tell a florist she's got to provide flowers for a particular kind of wedding. What if someone wants to marry his dog? She's got to have flowers for that?
That's
yes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because it's not your business what your flowers are being used for.
That's right.
If children worldwide are marrying their dogs, P.S. That's happening out there. Little kids are marrying their dogs.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that they're practicing bestiality.
Yeah.
But who are you to say that an innocent wedding to someone's dog doesn't deserve flowers?
That's right.
That's not your business.
They need flower arrangements too.
Right. Yeah. People can decide for themselves what events do and do not need flowers in their lives.
That's right.
And you as a florist are there to exchange money for those flowers.
That's right.
And then it's out of your hands.
Yep.
You can't know what happens after that.
That's right.
So, in any case.
And final news. This is a good one.
This is a great story.
It's a real doozy. Yeah. We go to Maine for this story, where Governor Paula Page, who is a Republican, had to abruptly end a town hall event Thursday after a former state representative, Joanne
Toomey,
who's a Democrat, threw a jar of Vaseline at him. She missed, unfortunately. But if you're wondering why she threw a jar of Vaseline at him, let us tell you, because it wasn't random.
No, she chose Vaseline... on purpose.
That's right. Yeah.
She served in the House of Representatives in Maine from 98 to 2006.
Yes.
And told told WGME, which is a local Maine station, that the Vaseline was a reference to comments that LePage had made in 2013 about the state senator Troy Jackson, who's a Democrat.
Yeah.
Where LePage said, Senator Jackson claims to be for the people, but he's the first one to give it to the people without providing Vaseline. He's bad, he has no brains, and he has a black heart. That is a colorful comment.
That is a colorful comment. Yeah, he was afraid that...
giving it to the people without providing Vaseline.
Yeah.
Ick. He's bad.
Right.
He doesn't have brains. And he's a black heart.
Oh,
of all
I
things.
I mean, it just...
So many
gross.
Yuck.
Anyway,
she was kicked out of the town hall meeting.
Immediately escorted, and then just got shut down.
Then the whole thing got shut down, and walked out, and then told the press that she didn't think it was very democratic of them to kick her out.
But throwing the Vaseline was perfectly democratic.
Yeah. So, well, of course.
Yeah.
That's how it works. As governor, you're supposed to have Vaseline.
Yeah.
Or items thrown at your head. In any case, LePage is a known asshole.
Correct.
Who, first of all, like an idiot. Tried to disparage the name of Maine's one and only celebrity, Stephen King.
That's right.
Don't mess with Stephen King in Maine.
I mean, come on.
Stephen King is the only celebrity who lives in Maine.
Yeah.
The only celebrity who wants to live in Maine.
Oh, whoever will.
The only human who's ever really wanted to live in Maine outside of a couple months in the summer when it's vacation land, as they say on their license plate.
And you can go have blueberries and lobster.
Yeah, a lot of blueberries and lobster available in the summer. That's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's not lovely? The 8 months of winter.
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
It's terrible.
I mean, I've never been, and I just
you already
can
know.
Only imagine.
I've been, so I know.
I know my geography and what that means about weather, and I'm not going there.
No, of course not. So in any case, he accused Stephen King of leaving the state to avoid paying taxes, although Stephen King paid millions in taxes, literally.
Yeah. And he demanded an apology, Stephen King.
Stephen King cares greatly about his reputation in Maine, because it's the only place where people don't find him totally intolerable. Because Stephen King is also just like an intolerable person.
You don't like him.
I am not a Stephen King fan.
I forgot. Yeah.
Although apparently he really goes all out for Halloween.
Oh, I bet.
Well, he would.
Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Why not? But then also, he recently said that undocumented immigrants were spreading disease. First of all, there's like no undocumented immigrants in Maine. Unless they're Canadians.
I was going to say.
And I know he wasn't talking about Canadians here.
They're not trying to get all the way up there.
No. How would you get up there?
Yeah, it's too
I
far.
Went to a wedding in Maine a couple years ago, and it took me like three modes of transportation to get up there.
I was going to say, and you had access to air travel.
Yeah. Still couldn't get up there in fewer than three modes of transportation. So, you know, I don't necessarily think undocumented immigrants are showing up on Maine shore.
They're not going there.
No. But in any case, that's the news this
that's
week.
It.
We will be back next week.
Yes, for our 150th.
We're gonna have
at least one special guest.
Right. We are trying to get more guests, but we don't know what will happen. Yeah, but our guest is pretty special. So
he's the best.
Yeah, he's the best guest. So yeah. You know. At least you'll have that.
That's right.
And we will see you at the Bonanza.
That's right.
Bye.